Hello and welcome to the Vassals of Kingsgrave. We are back this time around to continue our ongoing reread of the Harry Potter series of books. In this, the 14th podcast, we will continue our reading of the fifth book in the series, The Order of the Phoenix, covering chapters 12 through 16. My name is Zach, also known as Alias on various internet places, and joining me we have...
Hey, it's Xander, known as the Lord Baron.
Hi, this is Mary, also known as Nymeria on Discord mainly.
Hey, this is Adam, also known as Drowned Snow.
And I'm Michal, Inc. as Rain.
Excellent. Thank you all so much for joining me for this once again. And just a reminder, as always, that this podcast is full of spoilers for everything there is in Harry Potter, all that stuff, all the things that exist. All right, let's go to chapter 12. That will be our first chapter of the day as we continue Order of the Phoenix. This is our introduction to Professor Umbridge, to Umbridge as a teacher. The chapter opens with Harry just waking up, being grumpy still about the Seamus thing that we covered last time. And they head out to the common room and they see Fred and George are advertising for labor for their experiments, which Hermione is not happy about, and she says they'll have to talk about it with them, but Ron is not so thrilled about the prospect of that. At breakfast, Angelina reports that she has been made Gryffindor Quidditch captain, and they will be having keeper tryouts, which she would really like the whole team to be there for. The group gears up for the worst possible day of classes. They've got, like, double potions, divination, and they've got double defense against the dark arts, which sounds absolutely awful, as we'll see. It actually is awful. And Fred and George explain that the fifth year just kind of is like that with the impending OWLs. They explain how they're going to be getting a lot of work this year. It's going to be painful. Some people are going to lose their minds about it. They also reveal the full lengths of their joke shop business strategy and basically the reason why they're going to be at Hogwarts this year. They have other intentions than doing schoolwork. So yeah, I'm kind of curious to stop here for a second, what you guys think about this experience of, like, ramping up the school and the academic anxiety of it, and the notion that the characters are turning their eyes toward their future, you know, their job, their adulthood. They talk here about how Harry would like to, or how Ron would like to be an Auror. He actually is the one who won't be in the future. But yeah, what did you think of this aspect of this novel?
It's realistic.
Yeah, definitely. It's something I appreciate about this book in general, and I think the next book is it really embraces the school stuff really strongly, both the good and the bad of it. Of course, the stress that comes of increasing academic expectations, but also just the anxiety of keeping up your social relationships and the increasing amount of, like, romantic stuff that is introduced in these books. Yeah, it's just it all feels really, really relatable. Really painful.
Yeah. And I agree, and, like, it's weird reading it as an adult, because every time I've got I have a few younger friends who are still in school or in college, and when they're, like, stressed about exams or stuff, it feels remote to me,
right?
Because I don't have that stress anymore. It's been few years since I've had it, so I'm like, well, it's just exams, right? It's no big deal. But at the time, I was very much like them, and it's kind of the same here. But it's more it's fun to go back to that state of mind and read them being buried in work and schoolwork and stressed about their exams at the end of the year. It's very realistic and kind of fun at the same time.
Yeah, I'm just stressed reading these chapters. I don't know if it's, like, sympathetic memory or whatever, but, like, I remember I read Order of the Phoenix, like, right after one of my major tests in high school. It was my chemistry regent, and, like, I couldn't read it for a while because of the test. And I don't know if it's just, like, the reflexive memory of that test or whatever, but just, like, the piling on of work and the, like, oh, I'm really tired, so I'm going to go to sleep now, and I know I'm going to regret this in the morning. And then you regret it even more than you thought. And then, I don't know. For someone who still struggles with workload issues, it has teeth, I think.
Have to agree with that. All right, let's continue onward. We see as we head to potions, Harry fumbles another encounter with Cho. It doesn't go so great. And Ron engages in some very typical sports fan bullshit here, where he calls her out for being a bandwagon fan. But she points out that she has been a fan of that team for a long time. And she has earned her stripes as a fan. She's been through all the tough times. Then we go to potions, where it's pretty straightforward. Snape is awful, as usual, to Harry and to everyone. And after that, we go to lunch, where Harry snaps at Ron and Hermione when they start bickering like they always do, and he's tired of it because he's got a very high temper these days, and he heads to divination early. When Ron arrives, he confronts Harry on his bad behavior on behalf of Hermione, who's really the one pushing for this. Harry and Ron do a bang-up job at dream interpretation and head to Defense Against the Dark Arts, which is really the centerpiece of this chapter. So the new teacher, Professor Umbridge, explains that they will be taking a theory-centered, ministry-approved approach this year, which means no wands and a lot of reading. Hermione is not having any of this, very surprisingly. As Harry notes, he's never seen her refuse to read something that she's been assigned before, and confronts Umbridge about how this will help prepare them for real dark magic. We get the famous Ron ejaculated loudly dialogue tag here. Much, much noted, that particular line. The whole class is riled up when they realize what this class is going to be like, none more so than Harry, who invokes the name of Voldemort when asked who might attack them, and earns detention when he presses the point. Umbridge denies his claims about the Dark Lord having returned and says that anyone who supports those ideas are liars. Harry demands to know then what happened to Cedric Diggory, and Umbridge sends him off with a note to Professor McGonagall. When he gets there, McGonagall reads the letter, makes him eat several biscuits, and tells him that he needs to be careful around Umbridge. And of course, we find out at this point that he has been given a week's detention with Umbridge. So, thoughts on this aspect of the chapter, this new Defense Against the Dark Arts situation that we find ourselves in with one of the best teachers that they've ever had at Hogwarts.
It's incredibly worth reading this now in the current political climate that we're having than it was 15 years ago, where it just wasn't the same. It didn't have the same impact. So just really frustrating, like the fact that there's this secondary reality that Umbridge is trying to impose on them. It's kind of infuriating now, but also Harry is a badass because he just won't lie, and Hermione too, and I got that.
I'm more on the Hermione resistance side of this than the Harry resistance side of this, although I can't, obviously I don't blame him because it's still very sore and, you know, he's dealing with a lot of things, but like, I love the scene with McGonagall, like, have a biscuit is just iconic, but like, you know, she's 100% right in that, like, this is just not helping anything. This is just making your life harder, and you're not, like, I mean, you're not convincing Umbridge of anything. You're not convincing any of the students around you of anything. It's, you know, it's very frustrating. But yeah, a couple of times I was like, oh, you could just sub in certain political words or non-political words, certain science words nowadays in this conversation, and it would be pretty much the same.
Yeah, I don't know how true it is that just doing, yes, he won't convince Umbridge, but just accepting it for his schoolmates is also like, they are not convinced either, but they might be convincible. So I get why he doesn't want to give ground, because it's kind of, I mean, I live that often on other issues where I feel like I have to say something because I know I'm not going to convince the main person talking, but I might convince or give thoughts to all of the other
person
people
next to them,
who are not saying anything, And that's true, like, on social media and on a lot of stuff. The one talking the most loudly are always inevitably the one you hear most. So if you don't say something when you don't agree, you don't give another perspective or opinion when it might help someone have a better view of what's happening. So, yeah, I get what McGonagall is saying, and probably Hermione's way of doing this will be better, but I also understand Harry.
Yeah, because pretty much this entire book we've been seeing that just not a single person is listening to Harry. So, like, and he was isolated, you know, all throughout summer. So I could definitely relate to that sort of like lashing out, because, you know, like, why won't you just listen to me? Nobody's talked to me, you know, and it comes off much more aggressive than it really should be.
That's a great point, because I think what you get from Harry's POV in this and the way he goes about it is what most of us would experience in a situation like this that you guys are talking about, where there are people out there that are spreading lies and just refusing to believe you and creating defense walls that you just can't penetrate, and you just want to scream at them and say, come on, like, this is the truth. This is a reality. Why won't you accept it? And that is the common response, but as McGonagall points out, it's not an effective response in the situation. And I think the difference with Hermione is that, and you see this, it's kind of a running theme through all these chapters that we have today, she has found ways to actionably resist that don't get her in trouble, that don't cause problems for her necessarily. And I think that that's just the difference, is that she has found ways to do it that actually can get results that don't just create more problems for her and make her situation more difficult.
Yeah, and again, like, I don't blame Harry. Like, it makes sense. And, you know, he's also he's not used to having such antagonistic relationships with his teachers, except for Snape. So, like, it's particularly galling. But, like, Umbridge is baiting him, basically. You know, like, she's half deliberately trying to provoke him and half just hoping that nobody, like, notices what she's doing. And I feel like either way she wins. So I don't know. I mean, I feel like that's deliberate. It's like it's why these chapters can be so frustrating, because Umbridge feels like she has all the cards, and, you know, it's just emphasized with, like, the punishments and stuff. And I don't know. I was stressed reading this, guys.
She's stressful. But again, it's going like, back to relating being in school. I don't know about you guys, but I have had those teachers where, for whatever reason, they personally decide they don't like you. So they do that. They kind of antagonize you and bait you, because no matter what, they're the teacher, so they're always going to be in the right.
Yeah, I relate to this too.
Yeah, you have no recourse.
Right. Yeah, I was a very, I'm going to go with the positive term, very inquisitive as a kid, and I asked my teachers a lot of questions. I asked for clarification on a lot of things, like in this kind of same way Hermione is here, with lower stakes, of course. But I was like, well, why? Like, why is that true? Kind of thing. I was like, honestly, I was very often trying to get down to
the... Yeah, I had to make sure the teachers actually knew their shit, you know?
Yeah, and they would not enjoy that. I definitely had some less than positive interactions with teachers when I was a kid. So yeah, I definitely relate to that aspect of it. And the worst part in this case is that Umbridge, of course, is awful, but the way that she does it is so infantilizing. Like, she makes you feel, like, so stupid in the way that she goes about it, and even the class and the way it's being approached, like, the notion of a chapter called Basics for Beginners is so, on its own, infantilizing. It's brutal, and that's why she is so evil and painful to read.
I mean, even the, like, oh no, that won't do, good morning, Professor Umbridge, like, yeah. They're six, you know. Exactly. And it's designed to do that. Like, first of all, it's a power trip for her, but, like, it creates a sort of, I don't know, compliance/groupthink, you know. It's part of the process. Also, it's just really stupid.
Yes. All right, right. Well, you mentioned the punishment, so let's go ahead and jump over to what that is, which we'll see the true depths of the horror that is Umbridge. We have Chapter 13, Detention with Dolores, where we start with Harry still being pissed about all this at dinner, and the other students continue to talk about how crazy he is, and the group leaves as Ron sadly abandons his apple pie. I get that, Ron. I understand. back at the common room, Hermione asks a very logical question about why Dumbledore allowed Umbridge to be the DADA teacher, which we will get an answer to later. They start in on their homework, but Hermione has had enough of Fred and George's antics and goes to confront them. Ron does not help. Hermione threatens to write to their mother, which stuns them. Hermione starts leaving hats around the common room and covering them in trash for the elves to pick up. Thoughts on this little tactic by Hermione with her ongoing spew crusade?
Yeah,
it's a devilish side to her. You don't necessarily see.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's complicated. We've talked about this. Her intentions are good, and it's kind of like what, and we've probably made this connection before, but like connecting to like Danny in those books in The Song of Ice and Fire, freeing the slaves. Of course, on the face of it, a good thing, but it can have consequences that she does not fully recognize. So yeah, that's kind of what we're seeing here. Hermione, good intentions, but it's not necessarily as simple as she may think it is.
Yeah, I have to say, I think this is also like a high and a low for Hermione in quick succession, because like, I will write to your mother is just like the greatest possible threat you could issue to a Weasley. But also, I feel like this is really where Spew goes over the line for her, because like, ultimately, if you want house elves to have a voice, you have to give them the choice of whether or not to change their lives. And in that way, also, I don't understand how the magic would work, because presumably house elves have picked up laundry before. So I don't know.
That is a good question.
Not sure. It's like, what about?
Yeah, I thought it had to be like handed directly to them.
Yeah. Yeah. Like a house elf would like pick up somebody's dirty underwear and then be like, yay, I'm free. Like, you know, that doesn't make sense to me.
All right, where were we? All right, the next day, they head for a much better slate of classes, but are still buried in yet more mountains of homework. At Care of Magical Creatures, they are introduced to a more fun and somewhat less dangerous creature, Beautruckles. Draco Malfoy makes a leading comment about what might be going on with Hagrid, which sends Harry's gears spinning. Harry gets mad again as Malfoy continues his taunts and earns himself a bite from his Beautruckle. Wounded, he heads for Herbology, where he meets Luna. She rushes forward to report that she believes him about Voldemort, along with any number of other very plausible things that she believes. Also, Ernie McMillan believes him too, which is nice. At dinner, Harry is confronted.
It's not just weirdos. Yeah.
At dinner, Harry is confronted by Angelina, who is pissed that he got in detention when he should be at keeper tryouts. And Harry's like, what do you want me to do? I'm in detention. She demands that he find a way to get out of the Friday detention, which will probably go really well. Harry heads to the first detention where he learns.
All right, hang on. I just have one note for Angelina also. Like, I understand wanting the keeper to train with the chasers and maybe even the beaters, but like the seeker has nothing to do with the keeper.
He has no relevance.
Like, it doesn't matter how they fly. Yeah, exactly. It's completely like he's the best member.
You
got to
make sure they all get along well during training, though.
I mean, sure, but like, I don't know.
When you're slamming back butterbeers, but I think she's overreacting. You know, simpatico.
Gotta get that team chemistry.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. He literally has nothing to, like, I'm surprised Harry even trains with the team. What does he need them for?
They actually don't do anything of value. He's the only one who matters. Why even play that part of the game? Anyway,
a distraction.
Quidditch. All right. Harry heads to the first detention where he learns just how evil Umbridge is when he sees her decorating. No, it's when she makes him write the line, "You must not tell lies," over and over again with his own blood. All right, so that's what happens there. It's very bad. Harry, having fallen hopelessly far behind, struggles through all of his classes the next day and keeps the true horrors of Umbridge's punishment to himself. After Thursday's detention, Harry finds Ron sneaking around, and he admits that he is practicing to try out as Gryffindor's keeper. Harry's excited about this, supportive of his friend, but Ron spots the scars on his hand and demands that he go tell someone about it. But Harry refuses, saying that he doesn't want her to think she's gotten to him. At his last detention, when Umbridge goes to check his hand, he doesn't feel pain there, but in the scar on his forehead. Freaked out by this, he rushes back to the common room, where they are celebrating Ron getting made the keeper for Gryffindor. Harry goes to talk to Hermione, who is exhausted after a long night of hat-making, and Harry reveals what happened in Umbridge's office. Hermione says that the timing of it might have just been a coincidence and advises him to go to Dumbledore, and Harry rebuffs that as well. He heads to bed after what he has described as his first worst week at Hogwarts ever. So, again, the main thing here we get is this punishment being given out by Umbridge, and the ways...
Child abuse!
Yeah.
It's Harry Potter, and everybody does stupid decisions by not talking to each other.
I haven't
read this since I read it once when it came out, and so I'm like forgetting some of this. But like I'm reading this, and I'm like, wait a second, I don't remember the scar thing. So I don't remember what that's about. We'll get there, I guess. But I mean, obviously, we know like she's not great. But yeah, what is up with that?
With the scar thing.
Yeah, like, why is his scar burning when...
I believe it is, as Hermione says, it's not related to Umbridge at all. It's just a coincidence. It's because of Voldemort about to free all the...
But it seems like she knows, though. I don't know. I mean, it's like, the timing it just seems like... I don't know.
You're saying it seems sus,
Adam? Highly sus.
No, I read it as... Unless I'm conflating this with the movies, doesn't she wear the locket?
Not until much later, though. She does, but not until...
I don't think she actually has it at this point.
Oh, okay.
Locket is still in the cabinet, and everybody's like, what's this dumb locket?
That's right. Okay. You got it. Right. That was me confusing it, then.
She is so evil, and, like, to him, he does the same thing. And he's partly right with a few of the characters, like with Snape, or just the fact that evil means you're with Voldemort. That's not entirely wrong in the case of Snape, but in her case, it is for now. And I think he reads it this way, so. Like, he understands it this way. Like, she knows, and it's so we as readers also feel like it's not just a coincidence, but I think it is. And it's yes, because Voldemort is about to free everyone from Azkaban. Is that what's going to happen next?
Well, that doesn't happen in these chapters, but I believe that is... I think that's the thing, but I'm not actually sure. I don't even know if we know for certain.
Yeah, I'm not sure either, but... At least I think it is. Anyway,
it might also have been Sturgis Podmore or something with like that. I don't remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is definitely child abuse. And it's just, it's incredibly, like, awful to read. Like, just, this is shocking, actually. Incredible that this happens. But, I mean, Hogwarts.
Yeah, it does definitely feel like an escalation. Like, it feels like oh, shit's really getting real now. Like, for some reason, Filch talking about hanging people from their thumbs hasn't quite had the impact that this does. I was going to say something else. Oh, but, you know, in terms of what you were saying, Adam, like, no one talks to each other. I found that so frustrating. And then that's why I find the moment where Ron sees Harry's hand and, like, that secret is nullified, like, so gratifying, because it's like, at least this piece is out in the open, and like this injustice can at least be shared.
Yeah, and I think, and not to get like a little too serious on this, but I think the reason why Harry doesn't want to talk about it, he mentions he doesn't want her to think that she's gotten to him. Like, it reads to me like a very like textbook example of someone who's being abused and not wanting it to get out. Like, it like that is the reason. It's not just him like not wanting to talk about it. Like, there's deeper like trauma and rationale that he's giving to himself about why he doesn't want anyone to see this happening to him.
Yeah, that's possible. I mean, I think it's also just like Harry has very little control over anything, and having this to himself, like this like thing that he is enduring on his own, I think makes him feel like he has a little agency, but like, or is at least like an equal participant in this battle. But I definitely hear what you're saying about strong parallels to real life abuse.
Well, that's what kind of makes it all the worse, because of the powerlessness, the feeling that even if he did do these things, even if he went to Dumbledore, it wouldn't change things. I think that is kind of a pervasive feeling in these chapters, is that sense that he doesn't have a lot of agency over the situation. So he's taking it wherever he can, I suppose. Mm. All right. Any other thoughts on this lovely chapter?
It's great.
Yeah, I mean, it furthers that sense of overwhelm, that overwhelming feeling of, like, beyond just the child abuse, like, this feeling that Harry is being buried under all this homework, all this stress, all these things he has to deal with. And again, like, in the worst days of school, in the worst days of having to deal with that, definitely sympathize with just that feeling of drowning under all this pressure.
Yeah, and it's such a deliberate contrast to the way that Harry was expecting his year back at Hogwarts to be. Like, even in the normal course of things, it's hell because of the owls, and then, like, or OWLs or whatever. And then, you know, this has just turned everything completely on its head, and, like, Hogwarts is almost, like, unrecognizable. And it just sucks.
I mean, it is unrecognizable, but I will say, like, kind of calling back to the last chapter is, like, kind of, like, I mean, even with everything going on, it's like Cedric is dead and all this is going on, and he's still like, well, you know, me and Cho, wonder how she's gonna feel, because you know, I was there when her boyfriend died, and like, it's like still like the awkward kind of normal kind of teenage stuff going on, but surrounding, you know, the murdered boyfriend, you know, kind of brings a bit of darkness there. So at least there's some normalcy, sort of.
It's all a mix of normal stuff and hilariously awful stuff mixed together for lots of pain. All right. Michal, you want to take us through chapter 14?
Yeah. Hang on. Let me open it. Right. Percy and Padfoot. You can kind of sum this up with Harry and Ron have disappointing interactions with members of their immediate family, or people they consider members of their immediate family. But to go into more detail, Harry starts to do his homework early on Saturday morning. He's very concerned about his scar, so he manages to write a coded message to Sirius that includes the line, we've got a new defense against the dark arts teacher, Professor Umbridge. She's nearly as nice as your mum. And, yeah. So he goes to send the letter with Hedwig, which he does successfully. And then Cho comes in to the owlry, and they have kind of their first, like, hey, we can talk like normal people. Ron's not here being a sports bro. Neville's not here to cover me in, like, pus from a plant. It's all good. Cho actually expresses how grateful she is for Harry speaking up and being willing to get detention for telling the truth about Cedric. Filch comes in and is like, you're ordering dung bombs, and Harry's like, well, A, I already sent the thing, and B, no, I didn't, and Cho backs him up. And they random piece of information. And then Harry feels great because he had this conversation with Cho, and they're about to have Quidditch practice later. Hermione's like, you guys really should start your homework, and they're like, no, we're just going to go on brooms. So Harry kind of trains with Ron a little bit before their first official practice, and he's okay. Oh, yeah. They also see that Sturgis Podmore, 38 of number 2 Laburnum Gardens, Clapham. Do they put people's addresses in the paper in the UK? Like, is that a thing? I that doesn't seem like a good idea to me, but okay. Was arrested for trying to get through a door at Azkaban. I mean, was arrested and sent to Azkaban for trying to get through a door in the Ministry of Magic. Right, so we have some Quidditch, and then Angelina comes, and the team comes, and they start their formal practice. Of course, the Slytherins are there to laugh and yell at the Gryffindors, specifically including a very racist remark on the part of Pansy Parkinson, and just general shit-talking at Ron, because apparently they just don't have anything better to do with their lives. And, Ron does not do very well, and including hitting Katie Bell in the nose with a quaffle, and then because Katie Bell just can't catch a break in these books, to be honest with you, Fred gives her half of a blister pod thing, and says that this will take care of it, but of course it basically causes her to have a hemorrhage, and then they wrap up practice, which was lousy. Ron gets annoyed at Hermione for sort of assuming that practice was lousy because of him, and goes to bed. Then Sunday, they're basically doing their work all day in the common room, and they get a letter, or Ron gets an owl from Percy, who is just the worst. I mean, like... self-satisfied. Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna say that, like, you could just paste QAnon onto this, but, like, maybe you could a little bit. And is basically, he's basically like, our parents are idiots, and I will forgive them if they ever ask, and Harry Potter is dangerous, and get on the good side of Professor Umbridge, because all Percy cares about, at least at this point, is getting on the right side to advance his career, and he thinks that Ron feels the same way, and he does not.
Dumbledore wants to eat babies.
Yes.
Like Percy presumably was a fan of Dumbledore, right? Like when he was at school, like.
Oh, I think so. Yeah.
Right. So this is just like he's gotten in with a different crowd, and it's like, well, this is the thing I've always believed. Now, you know.
No, Percy is very much like the way the wind is going is where he wants to be. Like what he tells Ron, like someone who isn't, you know, an ally of Umbridge now will be very well suited for head boy in a couple of years, and like, you know, that's the calculus that he's making. Harry and Ron obviously feel like shit because of this, so Hermione agrees to do their homework for them, and Sirius shows up in the fire, and that was a bad idea. Maybe he was seen by a first year girl, but I don't know, whatever. They talk for a little bit, and Sirius doesn't think the scar hurting is a big deal. And he does admit to them that the reason why they are not able to train in practical defense against the dark arts is because Fudge thinks that Dumbledore is going to build an army of his students. Ron eloquently says, that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard, including all the stuff that Luna Lovegood comes out with. Basically, Sirius is just, they check in again on the Hagrid situation. Hagrid was supposed to be back by now. And Sirius is like, you know what? Let's hang out. Like, I'm going to come up to Hogsmeade, and we'll just, like, hang out, like, old times, like, last year. And, like, all three of them were like, no, that's extremely dangerous. The Ministry thinks that they know where you are, and they seem to have the right location, so maybe let's not. And then Sirius says that that Harry is less like his father than he thought. The risk is what would have made it fun for James, and he very coldly pops off the fire. And maturity. It's the thing that people need to work on in this book.
Not the best role model.
Not so much. I mean, again, understandable. He's stuck in the house. Although, honestly, if I were them, I would find a different place for Sirius. Like,
can we set him in a cave somewhere? Airbnb, like one with a view, maybe.
God, can you imagine staying at Grimald Place as an Airbnb?
Oh my god! You just walk in there and the portrait starts screaming. Oh fuck! Not a good time.
I feel like I'm really tired, and so things are conflicted in my head. And when I listen to you, Michal, that like how dangerous it is for Sirius to come, and he should stay home. And there's a part of me who's like, just feels this very much like what's happening now, where everyone is kind of hesitating. This is dangerous, but should I do it? Should I do? Don't. Should I not? And it's, yeah, everything's mixing up in my brain, and Voldemort is now COVID, or the other way around. So we can carry on, but I won't be very coherent, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think this you know, comes back around again to the very complicated nature of Sirius and Harry's relationship and Sirius's psychology. You know, because can't blame him for feeling the way he feels, but then, you know, putting that burden on 15-year-olds is, you know, not the best idea.
Yeah, it's funny how quickly it swerves, right? Because he gives this very sage comment about how the world isn't separated between good people and Death Eaters, and then he's like, you want to come hang out? You want to go to Hogsmeade? You want to have a beer? Right. It's like, it's just very... And you get it. You get both aspects of it, but it's definitely this duality to his character that is, like you say, very complicated.
I mean, he's someone that spent much of his life, like, he didn't really get that far outside of school, and then he was in prison, and, like, then, like, everyone he knew was dead, so I don't know. He, like, longs to maybe relive some of that.
Well, especially because the place he's stuck at is, you know, his a place he never felt home at.
Oh yeah, you can totally get how upset he is about his circumstances and how that would eat away at you, and how you'd seize on to any opportunity to get out of it. It totally relates. It's just if only he could like master those impulses in some fashion, it might have helped out at some point.
Yeah, and it's also like a, you know, I think Dumbledore has a line at the end that, like, you know, young people can't understand how age thinks, but old people should be able to understand how young people think. And, like, you know, I think from Harry's perspective and from Dumbledore's perspective, it's like, Sirius, like, you are in the only place where you will not be found. Like, it's totally safe. It's under the whatever charm it is, Fidelius charm, like... It's you're completely safe here, and then the fact is that Sirius just doesn't value that as much as they do, you know, and he's just like, it's kind of like a half life for him, but he still shouldn't put that on Harry.
I want to rewind for a second on this chapter and talk about that moment in the owlery, because I think for me this really describes what infatuation is like, and I think it's an important element of the story, this kind of doomed dalliance with Cho that goes horribly wrong. But just the idea of your, like, a crush and your mood hinging so much on the minor things the person says, like, these very minor comments, they, like, totally determine how you're going to think about everything. I think that's again, very, very true to life, and I think it's an important part of, like, describing what this experience of being at this age would be like.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, I also think, you know, for Cho, it's nice to see that, like, you know, before things go south, like, she is a smart... normal person, you know, who is maybe at this point not making the best emotional decisions, but also, like, you know, like, I feel like she comes off pretty badly after they break up, and I like that, you know, she and Harry have very smart and, you know, conversations and whatever. She comes across like a normal person.
Yeah, And who among us can say we were making the best emotional decisions?
Oh, this is true.
Well, even not having to deal with the death of your boyfriend in horrible circumstances.
Yeah.
And I mean, she is a Ravenclaw, so.
Ouch.
Oh, what does that mean?
No, I'm just saying, like, you know, she's probably well adjusted. Just, you know, it's fine.
I guess.
It's fine. Speaking of
Ravenclaws, there were a couple of, like, kind of shady, I thought, like, lines about, like, a group of Ravenclaws hurried up to get away from Harry, and a group of Ravenclaws was passing curiously by the table and slowed down to hear what they were talking about. And I'm like, excuse me, the other houses can also be, like, nosy and scared of Harry.
Where are the Hufflepuffs in all this? I have yet to see a Hufflepuff seriously. Do anything.
We had our
Hufflepuffs are out in the back.
We don't need to talk about them anymore.
We've got Ernie. Ernie's a Hufflepuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Zachariah Smith.
God, I love Ernie.
Yeah, but we don't like Zachariah Smith.
No.
Not so much. What else do we got in this chapter? I think it's very questionable that other students are allowed to view practice. I feel like that should be
decided,
but okay. Seems like competitive tampering. Yeah, I don't know.
It does. And again, just like, do they not have anything that, I don't know. It's so gross to me.
So
and like,
gross.
I mean, it's compounded by like just objectively racist, you know, comments that Angelina has to ward off. But, you know, I mean, like I, from a craft perspective, I appreciate the way that this book is structured in this early part, because everything you think is going to make you feel good makes you feel bad, you know? And like, Ron's on the Quidditch team, yay! Oh no, this sucks. And, you know, Defense Against the Dark Arts, oh no, this sucks. And, like, everything, just, like, being back at Hogwarts, this sucks. And I think that's just an interesting way to kind of frame the first half of the book like this.
Yeah, definitely. It sets the stakes and the eventual, like, sort of escape from that with the DA. It feels that much more exultant.
Yeah.
When you can actually have something that doesn't straight up suck.
Right.
It really illustrates how amazing how quickly time will dissipate when you're procrastinating on stuff. You're like, oh, we have plenty of time to do all this homework. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
Sympathized with that.
Oh.
That was painfully accurate, I must say. Yeah. Also, just the fact that, like, it keeps listing the work that Harry has to do. And I'm just like, every time it says essay, I like feel like all of my muscles clench.
Yeah, and they're like just... these foot long essays. The fact that they measure them in length makes it weird and scary. Especially because, like, I'm just bad at
yes,
handwriting,
right?
Like actual handwriting, like with a quill, that would suck. Like just having to write them out like that.
Because they measure it by length, can you just write like really big
I'm sure that's
to get
what
away?
Ron does, basically,
you know how you double space?
Yeah.
Nice.
But that must also be like a mind game, because like if you're packing the parchment too close, like are you like doing something wrong by not really addressing the point of the essay? And then like if you write too little, is it just wrong? And I don't know.
You'll get a D.
Yeah, remember we always had rules like it had to be single spaced and.
Yeah.
You know, yada, yada, yada. If you showed up
like
with
inch
like
margins,
48-point font, your teacher would be like, okay. Nice try.
One of those Skeeter quills and just do it like that.
I mean, dictation is a useful skill for people.
Valid approach.
Or a useful method of writing.
Indeed. All right. Anything else on chapter 14? Take us to 15.
Okay, I shall. Chapter 15, The Hogwarts High Inquisitor. Bright and early Monday morning, the trio discovers from Hermione's newspaper that the Ministry seeks educational reform. Dolores Umbridge appointed first ever High Inquisitor at Hogwarts. This basically means that she's going to inspect all the teachers and decide what they're doing wrong. Harry gets a D on his potions essay, and Snape is a dick about it. And but Harry then does work very carefully on his potion in that class and does better. Then we have a section that totally beggars belief in which Hermione asks the twins and Lee Jordan what the grades in the OWL stand for.
She would know.
And I'm just like, she would 100,000,000,000% know. And yeah, so
she we, even gets but for one the reader, wrong. She's like, it goes O to A? She's like, no.
I know. This is probably the dumbest Hermione is in the entire series of books.
I'm guessing the reason being is because, like, Ron would know because he's grown up with this. Harry doesn't care. And they're like, well, Hermione cares, so she has to be the character to ask. Like, everyone else would just know. But,
I feel like you could get away with Ron not knowing almost anything.
It's always a good exposition.
You won't argue to have Ron with me on that one. But...
Or have Neville come over and just be like, "What are we? What does this mean?"
Hey guys, what's with these owl grades? I got a Q. What does the Q mean?
I will say that it always really throws me off whenever anyone gets an A because I'm like, "Oh, ooh, an A. Cool, top
you get,
art."
Like, an endorphin yeah. rush when you see it. You're like, ooh.
Yeah, and then it's like, "Oh yeah, no, that's yeah."
What is it? Acceptable.
Something. Yeah, it's just accepted. It's like the last, it's the last passing grade. And so, yeah.
That's passing though.
That's what we call a C.
Yeah. Or you could also call it a P for pass instead of P for poor.
yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, oh, that just means they pass. That's just like the basic grade. No, poor. Yeah, but like, it's an acceptable poor. Wait, what?
Unacceptable poor.
That's a P plus.
These British. Yeah, the P plus. As long as never mind.
Well, anyway, Professor Umbridge is inspecting Professor Trelawney's class. It goes about as well as you would imagine. Turns out Trelawney has been teaching at Hogwarts for, 16 years? Nearly 16 years. Yes, that might be relevant later. She does have a legacy or a lineage of being a seer. And Umbridge is, it's kind of a battle of the dislikables. And I think Trelawney definitely wins, even though Ron and Hermione then get mad at her for looking at their homework. Because their perspective is about as long as the end of the class. So, yeah. And Umbridge is extremely pleased with herself. And then they go to her class, and Hermione raises her hand again and announces that she has read the entire book and obviously can quote a chapter and verse. And she disagrees with the, theses put forth by Wilbert Slinkard. Which is quite a name if you think about it for more than 2 seconds. So she and Umbridge face off again, and Umbridge is like, I'm here to teach you using a ministry-approved method that does not include students, inviting students to give their opinions on matters about which they understand very little. And she's like, you've had terrible defense against the dark arts teachers, except maybe for Quirrell, and of course that breaks Harry, and he says that Quirrell had Voldemort's head sticking out of the back of his own. Harry gets more detention. Angelina blows up at Harry, because I guess this time she does actually need him if they're going to practice, depending on how important you think anyone else is on the Quidditch team. Professor McGonagall is also very upset to learn that Harry has lost his temper again, even after she spoke to him. And, yeah. Then after lunch, Umbridge, we have our first round of Umbridge versus McGonagall, and it is pretty awesome. McGonagall kind of does not give an inch to Umbridge and does not allow her to interrupt. And it's pretty badass. Umbridge, because for some reason she's just looking at the teachers who are teaching the fifth year Gryffindor students, also comes to their Care of Magical Creatures lesson, and Grubbly Plank is like, yeah, I don't know why I'm here, but Dumbledore offered and it's great, they're pretty well prepared, cool. Of course Malfoy gives his whole spiel about how he was savaged by a hippogriff, and Harry gets another detention, I believe. Yes, he does. So then, when Harry gets back to Umbridge's office, he finds Ron and Hermione waiting to speak to him with a bowl of pickled essence of pickled Mertlap tentacles. Which helps his hand. And Hermione is basically like, "We want you to teach us defense against the dark arts." And Harry demurs, saying that he is not particularly good at the subject, and every time he's escaped Voldemort has been an accident or luck, or helped by someone else. He gets really quite upset when Ron and Hermione understandably react to this with some amusement, and then he's basically like, you know, don't laugh at me about this. I know what it's like and you don't. And Hermione says that that's why they need him to teach them. And she says the word Voldemort for the first time. And Harry agrees to think about it. But of course he has smashed the Mertlap bowl, so his hand is still going to hurt. And he goes to bed. His restless night was punctuated once more by dreams of long corridors and locked doors, and he awoke the next day with his scar prickling again. I just have to shout out Grubbly Plank again, because I just really like her.
She's the best substitute teacher ever.
She is! I mean, she's also just better.
She's just, like, straightforward. And not a bad person, not an amazingly... fascinating person, just teacher, which is like better than most these days.
Well, mm-hmm. That kind of relates to an interesting element of this, which is how Umbridge is able to twist the truth here effectively, because she does correctly point out that many of their Defense Against the Dark Arts teachers were terrible. She's not wrong about that. So, in a way, she's able to use that information to kind of make her case, which is what makes it all the more frustrating, is that she kind of has a point.
Yeah, and it has been obviously very inconsistent, their education. Although I kind of am amused by, like, Dumbledore, because it's hard to imagine, like, why Dumbledore would have, like, allowed himself to not find a teacher so that, like, the Ministry would be able to use Umbridge, but I could really just seeing him be like, well, it's just going to be 1 year, whatever. Like, what does it matter?
Yeah, we'll deal with it.
It's fine.
What's the worst that could happen?
Oh, man.
Yeah, I think what we get here with this, of course, the Hogwarts High Inquisitor, is really the first really clear step that of this idea of politics insinuating itself in an institution that's supposed to be about free learning, kind of free from these kind of interferences. And that's what makes it all the more painful, is this notion that, like, the Ministry has control over what is going to be taught at Hogwarts and what is deemed appropriate, which really feels kind of bad.
Yeah. And I mean, just like, not just bad educationally, but like, I don't think that there are people who read these books with, like, a clear-eyed perspective who don't think that maybe they could use some regulation at Hogwarts. But it's not necessarily the education that's the problem, you know? And they're just bringing someone in who is cutting students' hands open with a quill.
And again, that is why it's so tricky, because, of course, Umbridge's intentions and the intentions of Fudge are nefarious, and the reasons why they're targeting certain teachers are false. But at the same time, like, from the point of view of parents or whoever would have supported this, you can say, all right, but yeah, but, like, there's some fucked up shit going down at Hogwarts. A little regulation might be good.
Yeah, because obviously their intention is not improving the education. It's limiting the education.
Indeed.
So that's a big difference.
One little note, I appreciated when Hermione's, like, trying to see what grade Harry got, because, like, that's also a very real thing that people do, like, trying to hide your grade, and, like, someone else trying to spot what you got and compare.
Yeah.
It's definitely true to life.
Putting your paper directly into your bag so nobody can look over your shoulder.
You know
what's
going
to
happen. You know what's coming. You're just like, I'm getting this out of here right now.
I'm so definitely a Hermione. Like, I want to know.
I got an A. Did anyone else get an A?
Yeah.
Definitely had that.
I'm ashamed of it, but that's so who I was.
Yeah, it's a basis that we can work off of. Oh my god, Hermione.
All right, what else we got on the Hogwarts High Inquisitor? That name itself is just hilariously evil. Like, no one was like, can we come up with a little more of like a little covert name for what's going down here?
Yeah, and I mean, it's easy to see how like the movies translate the like the educational decrees into something like visually they have them be like almost like prison sentences, don't they look like, or something? I feel like there's just a very...
Oh, because they like bang them up on the wall outside of the Great Hall or something.
Yeah, they're like very ominous, and like I feel like that's really a good extrapolation. Oh, look at me saying something good about the movies.
I'm stunned right now. I'm like I know, right? When Hermione said that she would write their mind, I'm just like dumbfounded.
Yeah, but there definitely is like a growing undertone of like fascistic tendencies here. And I mean, obviously we know that that's going to come hardcore with Voldemort, which Umbridge will also be a part of, you know, but it's interesting to see that this at the moment, it's not just denial. It's like actively like limiting freedoms and free expression, from the quote unquote good government.
And again, by using these particular teachers as the first people being investigated, you get that kind of breath of feeling where obviously like McGonagall is beyond reproach, and you see that there's no way that she could be moved. But someone like Trelawney, as we see, like you feel as the reader, like she is an awful teacher. So like, how bad would it be if she were removed? But then you get the slippery slope of that where like someone is imposing that kind of will, and again, doing it for their own ulterior motives.
Yep. Do we have any thoughts on the conversation between Harry, Ron, and Hermione at the end? Because like I feel so split in this conversation, because I totally understand why Ron and Hermione are like, this is obvious, and like, stop being like pretending that you can't do this stuff, Harry. And like, this is almost funny to us. And then also Harry just like losing his shit at them again. Because it's just so much more visceral and painful to him than it is obviously for them.
Yeah, and I think too, because it's touched on in the next chapter a little bit too, because I feel like a lot of Harry's restraint is because technically everything he's ever done, he's gotten immense help from other sources. So he doesn't really see it as, you know, he's this special awesome wizard that does all this cool stuff. He's like, no, I just got lucky, this person helped me there, I stepped to the left instead of to the right this one time, you know.
Yeah,
and I think it's more than just the trauma and just the I don't know, the feeling that like he hasn't earned it, but the real fear that he actually doesn't have anything to teach. So if he was put in this role, he would actually do a bad job of it and put people in danger if they weren't adequately equipped, because he truly thinks like he does not have that to give. He's wrong about that, as we learn, but that I think that's a genuine fear that he has, that he would not actually be good at this.
Yeah, and I think there's just also, I mean, Harry's kind of like, he does deal with that idea of like false modesty, or not wanting to appear falsely modest, but also like just genuinely not. I feel like anyone who has a skill at all can usually like relate to this, right? Where people are like, oh, you're good at this thing, and you, right? Oh, Zach, you'll find it. You'll find it someday. But yeah, so I don't know. I feel like there's that line between like, you don't want to be braggy, and also you are a person who has, you know, sometimes low self-esteem. So there's like actual genuine like suspicion about whether you're actually talented at whatever thing people tell you that you're talented at. Yeah, there's
a lot of self-doubt involved.
Yeah. And then just, you know, it's like you don't, you're kind of caught between, and you don't really know, because you don't have ownership, you don't feel ownership over that thing yourself. I think that's something about Harry also, right? Because like a lot of these things, yes, he's chosen how, like, to, he chose to, like, go after the Sorcerer's Stone, he chose to go down to, you know, the chamber and all that, but, like, I don't think he feels like he chose that. Like, I think he very much thinks, like, well, that was what I had to do. And so that is going to be kind of a barrier to, I guess, embracing the idea that he's really, like, good at this, you know? Like, I even I think with the, like, Patronus that he conjures at the start of the book, it's like, well, what was he supposed to do? Like, you know, he was gonna get his soul sucked out otherwise, like, you know.
Right, he's a very no chance, no choice kind of person.
Yeah, exactly. Which is why I think it's, you know, I don't like the idea that Harry is, like, attention seeking, or, you know, or drama seeking, or whatever, or praise seeking, and you know, that some of the fandom gets on him for, because, like, he doesn't actually view himself in that way at all. So that's my take.
Good takes. All right. Do we want to head to our final chapter? Chapter 16.
Yes.
Starting to ramp up to some exciting stuff. You will be leading us towards Xander.
Correct. Obviously, this is the point in the book that we all wait for in any Harry Potter book, where it really kind of kicks it all into gear. So Harry is finally finished with all of his detentions, and he has a thought, wondering if his scars on his hand will ever fade away. We find out they will not. Hermione asks Harry if he's thought more about teaching Defense Against the Dark Arts, which he says he has, which relieved both Hermione and Ron, thinking he was going to snap on them again. Harry doesn't think many people will show up, considering how the wizarding world views him after all the events of last year and the Daily Prophet and the Ministry, everything like that. They decide they're going to have their first meeting in Hogsmeade the first weekend of October. And Harriet is worried Sirius might just randomly show up, but Hermione dissuades him and tells him that Sirius generally listens to Dumbledore. When they go into Hogsmeade, Hermione takes them down a side street to a bar called the Hogshead Inn. There's only a few patrons in there, and Harry thinks the barkeep looks familiar. And then all the students that were invited started coming, which surprises Harry because there was a lot of them, which I actually like too, because in the writing, the Weasley twins ordered 25 Butterbeers, and then when I wrote out this list of who all showed up, it actually was 25 people, and I don't know why that surprised me. But all the people that showed up are Neville Longbottom, Dean Thomas, Lavender Brown, the Patil sisters, Cho Chang, and Marietta Edgecombe, who Harry doesn't recognize, probably won't matter later. Luna Lovegood, Katie Bell, Alicia Spinnett, Angelina Johnson, the Creevy Brothers, Aaron McMillian, Justin Finch Fletchley, Hannah Abbott, Susan Bones, Anthony Goldstein, Michael Corner, Terry Boot, Ginny Weasley, Zachariah Smith, with the Weasley twins and Lee Jordan as well. Oddly enough, or unsurprisingly, there are no Slytherins present. But once everybody grabs their beers and sits down, Hermione reminds them why they're there, and Harry tells the group he's not going to talk about what happened with Cedric Diggory. So if you were expecting that, to just leave. And then
just to say, the only reason he has to say that is because Zachariah Smith asks.
Right, yeah.
Hate that kid.
Me too. I think we all do. I kind of wrote it after that, but whatever. The kids all kind of start talking about Harry's deeds. As he tries to, like, defuse it, he's like, well, you know, I did do that technically, but, and then they just keep talking over him. But that actually helps convince the skeptical Zacharias. And then Hermione has everyone sign a parchment to ensure they don't talk to anybody else about the whole plan with this, and then once they find somewhere that they can meet up to do these lessons, they'll contact everybody who signed the list, and then after that the group leaves in twos and threes, and then there's some stuff about, you know, Ginny Weasley dating and showing Harry, but that's the end.
Why is the Hogshead so awful? Like, why is it so bad? Why couldn't Aberforth make this place, like, a little more hospitable than it is?
To be honest, reading it now as an adult, I'm like, this sounds like a dive bar that I would like in a town I've never been to find.
That's true. Yeah, it's just like the dirty glasses. I wouldn't want to drink that.
Counterpoint, though. If the Three Broomsticks has the monopoly in Hogsmeade on, like, the respectable bar patrons market, then perhaps Aberforth is seeing his area and leaning into it.
You gotta find your niche, and you gotta emphasize that. Absolutely. He's a good businessman. So you mentioned earlier, Michal, that the whole thing about the OWLs with Hermione was kind of weird and didn't make sense. I don't honestly think that she would actually think Umbridge would be okay with this, with them having this little club to practice defense against the Dark Arts. But I think she just understands that there's no option, right? That this has to happen. This is important, and it needs to happen. So regardless of that, we're going to make it happen.
Hermione even talks about that a little bit in this chapter, because, like, doing it at the school, obviously that could sound weird, but it's not against, she, you know, looked over all the Hogwarts rules. They can go to this bar and, like, yeah, there's going to be a group of kids, but it could just be a study group. You can't say otherwise, kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think Hermione is kind of like, I think she's half aware that, like, probably more restrictions are coming. But, like, at the same time, you know, she is a rule follower, and this is not technically against the rules. Technically.
It is heartening, I think, at this part, that we get this realization that, as we learned initially, Harry thinks that they're just here to hear about Cedric and what happened. And certainly some of them, that is a part of their motivation. But once he kind of lays down the law and says, no, I'm not going to talk about that, the fact that they stick around and that they do eventually sign shows to us, and it is a clear signal of a shift, that there are people that, even if they don't fully believe Harry at this point or fully are in his camp, they want to learn from him and they want to learn in general. And it does, again, I think, signal a shift and a meaningful one for how things are going to move forward.
And I think it's also nice because a lot of the time at Hogwarts, we don't get necessarily that joy of learning. You know, like Harry's line when they're in their first history of magic, he's like, oh, well, this would have been vaguely interesting if, you know, they had a competent teacher or a different teacher. And I'm like, I don't think of history as, like, potentially vaguely interesting. Like, I think of it as boring if it's delivered badly or very interesting. And, you know, like, there's just that kind of, like, either you're, like, a fanatic like Hermione, or you're just kind of like, yeah, well, whatever. And, like, cool, I get the practical stuff with defense, but whatever. And I think the DA kind of, it is obviously for practical reasons, but there, you know, Harry comes to really love teaching, and he even kind of gets the bug a little bit at the beginning of this chapter when he's, like, thinking about it, and I find that really nice.
Yeah, as someone who does love learning and love learning about things, I think you're right that sometimes that does get brushed aside, and that is one of the reasons why these DA chapters are so exciting, because you really get to get into the actual process of learning these again, like, really useful things that they're going to be able to apply later. But just, like, from both sides, like Harry being the teacher and the other students being the people learning, it is exciting, and it's something that I think we don't, like, recognize necessarily on the face of it, but it is really it's really cool and it's fun.
And again, you know, it's just like that, like, rare light of house unity, because, like, I think the reason why Zachariah Smith is, like, so frustrating is because I'm sure there are some people here who are also kind of morbidly curious about what happened to Harry. You know, like, that's there's nothing wrong with being curious, but, like, they're not fundamentally there to get the scoop, you know, like, and they're not going to demand an explanation. And they are there because they share this common value system. And Zachariah Smith is kind of, like, the only, like, outlier from that. And, you know, it's like the first time we see that in the books, like, people from different houses really effectively joining together and just gives me such like warm feelings, and I, you know, I love it so much.
Yeah, and I think I was saying this earlier. I think one of the reasons why it's so cathartic and so fun and warm and nice is because of how awful the classes have been up to this point. Like, they haven't felt like fun classes where, like, the normal fun Hogwarts experience. They felt genuinely awful. So you get that release from that, and then...
Mm-hmm.
And I'm excited to get to it.
Yeah.
It should be fun. What else do we got here?
Mundungus Fletcher being a creep.
He's the witch... in the back. Do we know who... Do these other people matter? I actually don't remember if the other people...
I don't think so, but the Dementors with the Yorkshire accents really cracks me up.
That's good. And the guy with the smoking drink is just chugging it. Oh, I sympathize with the difficulty of scheduling things, like when they all talk about how like they have Quidditch practice, we have to schedule it. Yeah, I get that.
Well, just try and schedule a podcast.
It's way worse.
At least you're all on the same time zone.
In the same location.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, and the like stress of finding a location also. Like, I've had that multiple times where I've wanted to make an event with people who are excited for the event to happen, and like everybody's in, but the fact is we can't find a place to do it. So like, yeah.
Only there is a room specifically designed to be whatever you need it to be.
Exactly.
Or then you find a place and then people are like, oh, actually, you know, I have this other thing that came up. And suddenly you're like, will anyone be there at all?
Right.
Like one person said something. You're like, no. And it's usually fine.
Yeah.
That just gave me chills. All right. Any final thoughts on these chapters before we wrap it up?
I will say that I don't think that Marietta Edgecombe is planted effectively.
What do you mean by that?
Like, we don't know her name. You know, I mean, I guess this is an okay introduction to her, but she almost never comes up again. You know, and then I remember, like, being so nervous when, you know, it's like the they were betrayed. Like, somebody exposed them and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, who's this going to be? And it was just, like, this random person who was, like... You know, we don't even really have, like, she doesn't have any lines, really. So, like, you know, I feel like it's the books are usually better at planting things that you go back and see and, like, recognize as significant. Whereas this is just kind of like, eh, all right.
Yeah, really the...
Yeah, literally a throwaway.
Yeah, really the impact of her being the person who snitches.
Yeah.
The sneak is plastered on her face. is Cho, her relationship with Cho, and how this kind of causes issues with her relationship with Harry. I think that's really the impact, which, you know, kind of makes her more of a nothing character, but that's really all that the only point of tension of it being her.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was awesome. Thank you all so much for coming on for yet another Harry Potter podcast, our 14th podcast. We will continue with chapters 17, Educational Decree number 24, through chapter 21, The Eye of the Snake, next time, which will be very exciting. We'll be getting into the DA.
Ooh,
and
cliffhanger.
And yeah, we'll have to wait until the time after that to see what happened with the snake. So yeah, we got lots of excitement ahead of us, so that should be fun. Again, thank you all very much. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this. If you want to check out more VOK, you can do so at VOKpodcast.com. You can check us out on YouTube, on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, on all the social-y things. And you can, if you want, please join us on Discord, where we do a lot of our planning and just general discussion about all this stuff. That would be great. You can find links for that on the socials and that kind of thing. Thank you all again, and we will be back again with more fun content very soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.